We're here on another episode of Hash Out Podcast. I'm Hava.
I'm all.
And unfortunately, today we don't have Tapio with us. She was out on a conference, but she will join us next time. Today we're here. We have a very amazing person joining us today, is Imam Ahmed. And if you would like to please introduce yourself.
Thank you, first of all, for having me. My name is Ahmed Al-Amin, and I'm the Imam and the Director of the Religious Affairs of the Indianapolis Muslim Community Association, or known as IMCA. For many people who do not know what that organization is, it is the first Muslim organization and Muslim community in the state of Indiana. The idea started back in 1968, and then now it's where it is right now. And we call ourselves as the reference organization that represents the Muslim community in the civic society, both on political level and also in interfaith. I also serve as president of the board of CIC, Center for Interfaith Cooperation, which is the largest also interfaith organization in the state of Indiana. We have hundreds of different communities and denominations, faith groups are represented in that. And I'm also a secretary for the board of GIMAN, Greater Indianapolis Multi-Faith Network. It's an organization that was established to address the issue of homelessness and gentrification in the city of Indianapolis. On a national level, I'm also a member of My Neighbor Keeper, or it's called My Neighbor Keeper, because it's a multi-faith organization that brings Muslims, evangelical Christians, and Muslim Jews and evangelical Christians to talk to another. Specifically, we chose evangelical Christians because we have a relationship with almost all other Christian denominations, especially except for the evangelicals. So we made a strategic, and that happened after 9/11, that evangelical Christians, and Bush was actually part of that group, I guess. They didn't, they were spearheading the war against the Muslim or Islamophobia. So Pastor Bob Roberts, who is an evangelical pastor, with his audacity, he was able to start a conversation with Imam Mahdi, who is the Imam of Muslim community in the U.S. They started this idea, and Ambassador David Saperstein. So they come together and they started this initiative, and I represent the state of Indiana in that national initiative, where we go not only in different cities in the states, but also we go overseas, where we do retreats to treat imams, to train imams, pastors on how to communicate and talk to another peacefully coexist, especially in Muslim-majority countries. Last, I'm also a police chaplain of Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, and also sheriff chaplain of Marion County Sheriff's Office.
Thank you so much. We really do respect you. We've heard so many great things, so well known so personally. So on top of that, and we appreciate your leadership in not only the Muslim community, but just communities overall and other religious denominations. But overall in Indiana, your work really is demonstrated by the youth as they talk about you and everything. And we wanted to come and bring you on as we're talking about the topic, which is navigating Islam in the West. So it's a hard topic, but it's something we must talk about as the things are going on in our current, state. As we all know, the Palestine conflict is going on, more specifically, the Palestinian genocide is going on, and I think we need a lot of advice and knowledge, especially as someone that is a leader and has navigated those spaces dealing with interfaith talks and meetings. I think it's important to get that aspect of things because I think we tend to grapple on to the fact that it's a religious issue when I think we need to move past it as the deaths keep accumulating. It's over 30,000, I believe, at this point. And even before that, we can talk about more in detail. But yeah, knowing your perspective on things will be really beneficial. And that kind of leads us on to our first question.
Yeah, so the first thing you kind of just want to talk to you about is, as it pertains to, Islam and other religious issues, America kind of has this weird thing where, we say freedom of speech, but sometimes some topics are viewed as taboo. So as people of, Islam in the West, how should we go about expressing, our views as Muslim people and how should we engage the topic or the idea of this freedom of expression as it pertains to one's personal beliefs and such as religion?
So first of all, let's set the record straight. Many times people do not understand what Islam is. And this is why they embark from the notion of judging a whole religion. First of all, Muslims are the quarter of the world population. You know, we have about close to 8 billion people in the world. Muslims are 2 billion people. And if the Muslims were all violent and as demon as people think, then probably there would never be peace in the world. And so that's one thing. The second thing, understanding Islam within a context. Many times people, when they talk about Islam, and especially this message is to our brothers and sisters in Christianity and Judaism, Islam is not a stranger religion to Judaism and Christianity. Islam is a continuation for Judaism and Christianity. And this is why I tell people who have never read the Quran, read the Quran, because first we believe as Muslims in the Old Testament, and then we believe in the New Testament, but the Quran is the newer testament. And this is why we say Islam is a continuation for these two previous religions. So we encourage people to look at Islam within the context of this Ibrahim faith. Yes, we have major differences between the three religions, just like there are differences between Judaism and Christianity. And that is considered to be a healthy difference. This is why the difference between Islam and Christianity is not looked at as healthy. So first of all, we, especially when we are talking in academia, and in a campus, in university, we ask people to get out of intellectual laziness condition that we are in. Many times people don't put that extra effort to go and dig into books and read about Islam instead of just listening to media channels or relying on social media or you know, making conclusion based on certain incidents that are considered to be isolated in the history of humanity that are committed by Muslims, unfortunately. One of these is 9/11. You know, in one of the interfaith events, one of the Christians asked me, why are Muslims so defensive? I said, we are put in a position of defending ourselves. We are not naturally defensive because I'm very confident about Islam. I believe in Islam. I believe in everything that Islam teaches. But the way Islam is being portrayed, I have to be always in a position of, no, Islam doesn't do it. Islam means this when it says this. And unfortunately, we are the only one who are in that position. That put responsibility on us, but nonetheless, it's an obligation on everyone else to go out of this intellectual laziness, to read about Islam from intellectual books. We have books that are written. There is a rich history, intellectual history of Islam. In fact, Europe, during the Andalusia time, the Islamic universities were considered to be like Harvard today, like Yale today, like, you know, Cambridge. And if you read in the history of civilization, you will see a lot of Muslims who were scholars, but they were doctors at the same time. Even the numbers we write today, they're called Arabic number because they were invented by Arabs who were Muslims. There are a lot of medical procedures, and I will get to be in medical school. A lot of medical procedures were invented by Muslims. In astronomy, you will see a lot of Muslim scholars who have invented. I was in UAE just 2 weeks ago. We went to the Islamic Museum of Islamic Civilization in Sharjah. Literally, the tools that Muslim scholars have invented in terms of astronomy, medicine, environment, it's just amazing. So why am I talking about all this before I answer your question? People tend not to look at Islam as this religion that brought or gifted this world this beautiful civilization. They look at Islam from the perspective of 9/11 or from the perspective of October 7th. And I know when we talk about October 7th and the Hamas attack and new settlements, it's very important for us to read the history and have clear understanding. Having said this, as a Muslim in America, you know, I feel way better being Muslim in America than being Muslim in the Muslim world. I'll give an example. The one reason why I feel I'm better Muslim in America than being Muslim in many Muslim minority countries is freedom of expression, the Constitution. And But unfortunately, that same freedom of expression, which is a very valuable asset that the Constitution has given us, it is being taken away from us by, unfortunately, the current climate and the environment that we are in. And this is why freedom of expression, it should be a gift, and especially on campuses. You know, I mentioned that I was with DA and the Southern District and the FBI. We were talking about hate crime. And one of the things that I came out with is you can be as hateful as possible in America, but it is not considered to be a crime. But the moment you turn that hate into a threat or into an action, then actually it is going to be a crime. So hate crime is hate plus crime. And that is, as much as we don't like hate, we hate hate. And I tell people the only time I use hate is when I hate hate. You know, but you know, it is okay for people to have freedom to express themselves. And that is a gift in Islam. We believe in that. You know, God who created us, he could have stripped that ability from us. But he created us and he gave us the ability to speak, the ability to think, to even disagree with him, even though he's a creator. So who is that person who will come and strip that gift from us? This is why I really think on campuses, and this is really a big issue on campuses now. The moment you start exercising your freedom of speech, somebody will come and say, oh, you are anti-something, mm-hmm. or you are phobic of something. If the Constitution grants us this right, why are we stripping this people away, this right away from people on campuses? Campuses should be a place where these ideas, even though they are completely different, they are completely opposite, people still have to have the freedom so that they can express themselves to support intellectuality. Mm-hmm. Everywhere, when on campus, especially on campuses, when the freedom of expression is stripped away from us, where we're stripped from our freedom of expression, we are eventually killing intellectuality, and we are killing eventually academia. Because the reason why academia flourishes and goes farther because people can express themselves without fearing to be canceled, without fearing to be labeled by someone. And most of the time, these labels are emotional labels. And it's very odd to see someone in the academia not going back to data and facts and instead acting from emotions. So I sincerely hope that first to the larger community on the campus to go and read more about Islam, read more about Islam, learn about events, but more important than the events that happen, unfortunately, events that have happened, is knowing the true message of Islam. One of the most widespread books is Quran, and I highly encourage people, it's available for everyone. If you don't speak Arabic, read. There is a version called Sahih International. It is one of the easiest translations of the Quran. So just open it by yourself, take just 15 minutes, and you know, I'm not promoting Geico or anything, but the Geico advertisement that I use it a lot, I would mind them hearing from me multiple times, but 15 minutes could save you considerable more courage. 15 minutes of reading, it actually saves you from ignorance. So I really hope that people will put some time, especially professors, researchers, and also students as well. I hope I answered your question, but I really believe that as Muslims, we have a lot of blessings being in the U.S. because of the First Amendment right. And I hope that we can continue exercising this, even though now we are actually being threatened, unfortunately, as Muslims, when we exercise that right. And one of the things that people need to understand, if the U.S. Constitution gave me the leisure and the right to speak, I think I have right to speak about the principles of my religion. And one of the principles of my religion is actually justice. And I have not seen in any script or scripture that says, all those who have believed, and this is in the Quran, all those who have believed, stand up for justice, persistently for justice, even if it is against yourself. So when the justice is against saying the right thing and saying the just thing is against yourself, you still have to say it. And Allah says, or God says in the Quran, that be just even if it favors your enemies. So the fact that there is hatred between you or animosity between you and a group of people should never allow you to be unjust. Be just. And this is why when we speak today against the atrocity of any society or any nation, we are embarking from the concept of justice that is rooted in our religion, that is supported by our constitution. So how that is going to be anti-something?
I think that's a great way to describe everything that's going on right now, especially as students, especially here on the campus experience. I think a lot of us, you can speak for both of us as Muslim students, that we have felt threatened, just as the freedom of expression that you expressed in the First Amendment, right, where we should be allowed to express ourselves religiously. And even as much as being on campus has felt like such different atmosphere, and as the recent events that have happened, and we know that Islamophobia has always been there, and especially at the wake of 9/11, after everything happened, you hear a lot of horror stories that happen, and then
Yes.
it's everything kind of tames down a bit, right? And then it life seems usually there's obviously hate crimes there, and it's not always going to exist. But then after everything happened after October 7th, it's like you feel it again. It's like a new awakening. It's like, oh, you feel such isolation from the rest of your group, and you don't realize it, but then you're like, I walk every day representing my religion, especially as I think a lot of Muslim women have felt it a little bit more in the fact
Yes.
that they wear hijab. So, and hijab, for the viewers that don't know, is the what I'm wearing right now. It's a covering that us Muslim women wear. But I think a lot of us have felt it where we don't feel safe or we feel threatened, where we can't say simple things, we can't do simple things that we usually were able to do, and now it's faced with such like stigma behind it. So yeah, I think it's a great point from our whole campus
I
environment.
really wanted to share with you my prayers, first of all, and my thoughts with all the Muslim students on campus, for especially for our sisters who wear a hijab, which makes them easily identifiable, but also for the brothers who pray in public or their name is known as Muslim name in public. I also, as an imam, first of all, you have my full and unconditional support. And no one should feel threatened to for just being who they are. And this is what the basic idea of being an American is. If we are feeling threatened in an environment that's supposed to be the safest place, I tell people, house of worships, college campuses or schools, workplaces, this should be sacred places where everyone should be there the way they are. I don't have to pretend to be someone who I'm not just because I will be threatened if I show my true identity. And so you have my support, first of all. The second thing, I have always been thinking about you as a student on campus. And I tell people, I have a way to defend myself, but I feel bad for many of our students who are vulnerable, but they don't even know how to defend themselves. Even though the Constitution is here to defend themselves, the law is here to defend themselves. A few things. First, it's very important that we are calling upon the leadership of the campus to be very vigilant about these matters, making sure that all students from different walks of life, different backgrounds, they are equally welcome and safe on campus. That's the first thing. The second thing, I tell Muslims, it's very important to report, because many times Muslim students go through a lot, but they don't report. If it is not reported, it is not there. And that is speak by themselves. So if we go and say, okay, Muslim students are facing Islamophobia on campus, we go back to whatever database we have, okay, there is no, absolutely no report. There is no information that is too little. Every information is valuable toward making changing policies or introducing new policies or rules and regulations. The other thing is, as much as this sounds, whatever the situation is now sounds negative, I really think I'm very hopeful and optimistic, because the alliance and the allies we built and the relationship we've developed on campus and outside of campus revealed how much support Muslims have. And many times, actually, the support comes from Muslims, from people who are not Muslims, more than the Muslims themselves. And I've always said this as imam in organization, the Muslim organizations have a tremendous obligation to make sure that the Muslim students and campuses are reaching or are having their needs met, it doesn't matter what it is. This is our obligation. And I will say this, and I'll take personal responsibility and communal responsibility that the organization, the Muslim organization, the messages are failing the Muslim students on campus. So I'm really calling on the Muslim organizations to make sure that they are prioritizing Muslim students on campus and giving them the support that they deserve, whether it's financial support, emotional support, spiritual support, guidance, what to do when there are situations. The last point is, this is an educational moment for all of us. It's an eye-opening. Allow me to take you back a little bit to October 7, or even before October 7. Many times people focus on October 7, but they don't go to the history since 1948 or before that. There was something that was called Palestine, and that didn't, it doesn't exist anymore almost. Even the West Bank that exists, or the Gaza that exists, Gaza is 40 kilometers by 12 kilometers, I think. It's a very small place, and it is called actually the biggest open prison in the world. And I have heard from people who are from actually Palestine about the struggle of Palestinians. Last week, you know, I was in Jordan, and I stopped by the biggest camp, I'm sorry, Palestinian camp. It's called Mukhayyam al-Wahdat. It's in Amman, Jordan. Literally, when you see the condition of Palestinians in that camp, it's just so, you know, it's heartbreaking. And this has been going on for years. We've killed hope in people, not only in people, in generations. And now what is going on? Yes, what happened on October 7 is wrong. And everyone who's listening to this, it's very important for people to distinguish, no, what is Hamas?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So to me, Hamas is not a factor in this matter. People, the issue of Palestine, Hamas is only 37 years old. And the issue of Palestine is 7 years old. So to us, just focusing on Hamas, what they did on October 7 is completely wrong. And we all agreed that we don't support Hamas. And Hamas is designated a terrorist group by the U.S. government and by many other governments. And we as Muslims, we have an obligation to be abide by that law. So the fact that, you know, what is going on today, yes, it was instigated by Hamas at a certain time, which is October 7, and 1,200 people got killed. You know, our heart goes out and our prayer goes out to the victims of these families. And we told, as Muslims, and I told you at the beginning, and I was saying, we embark from principles. In Islam, we have this verse that says, "Min ajli dhalika katabna ala bani Israel, annahu man qatala nafsan bighayri nafsin aw fasadin fil ardi fa ka'annama qatala an-nas jami'a." We are not anti-Semitic as Muslims. We cannot. We will be against our religion if we are anti-Semitic, because we quote from the Israelites. We quote from the Hebrew Bible. We don't call it Bible. We quote it from Torah. And this verse specifically says, we have decreed upon you as Muslims that just like we decreed upon the Israelites, that anyone who kills one person as if they killed the entire humanity, and whoever saved one life as if they saved the entire humanity. So that verse was sent to Moses, Prophet Moses, to the children of Israel, and then it is sent to us as Muslims. And this is why I condemn killing any civilian without any reservation. So it's very clear that, let's embark from that point. We condemn clearly and unequivocally what happened on October 7th. Okay. Do you agree on that? Now let's take that as a point of going. Why we don't have the audacity to condemn what Israel is doing today by killing 29,000 people? Again, one life is precious. I don't care what their faith is, what their background is. But now today, the ratio is 1 to 125 people. So I condemn what happened on October 7th. Where is your audacity to condemn what has been happening after October 7th? Which is considered to be a war crime. It is not by my definition. It is by Geneva Convention. It is by the United Nations resolutions. And there are, you know, go online and see how many resolutions were issued by the United Nations against Israel. So it's very important for people to understand. Talking about Israel is completely different than talking about Jews. We have excellent relationship with the Jewish community in the state of Indiana, in the city of Indianapolis, in the state of Indiana, and across the nation. In fact, I'll share this story with you. I was born and raised in Medina, and I was in Medina when the Christchurch shooting happened. Christchurch, New Zealand, when a fireman opened fire on Muslims praying in Jumu'ah in New Zealand. While I was there, the masjid's Facebook live goes off. And then I was with my cousins in Medina, and I see a group of Jews come to Masjid al-Fajr, and they were guarding the Muslims while they were praying. And I showed my cousins, and they're like, well, what is this? I said, these are rabbis, Jews leaders who come to Masjid protecting the Muslims while they were praying. And literally what they said, we never knew that the Muslim Jews will ever support the Muslim. And at the same time, when the tree whatever in Pennsylvania, when the attack happened on synagogue, I went to the synagogue, IHC, Indiana Hebrew Congregation, in the room packed of people from different walks of life. I went there literally didn't prepare my notes. I didn't prepare talking points because I knew I had to speak from my heart. I went and spoke in full support to our Jewish brothers and sisters that they must be protected, they must feel safe. So once we establish these principles, it's very important to move on to speak the truth because history has to be unfalsified. And we're talking about academic integrity. We're talking about plagiarism is one of the biggest crimes in academia, right? Because it's stealing somebody's property. And this means that integrity is important. And this is why it's important for our younger generation to hear about the history the way it is, not the way I want it to be, because I have my own biases as well. And this is why, there was a bill that was being discussed. It's called HB 1002. Probably many of you have heard about this. That bill, in its initial version, it is actually, repeated, even though it mentioned that. And condemning Israel, it doesn't equate to supporting to being anti-Semitic. The fact that it repeated Israel multiple times and infringes the freedom of students potentially to defend the Palestinians, right? I wrote an op-ed in one of the local newsletters to oppose this bill. Fortunately, they've added amendments to that bill when we're hoping that it will be more inclusive and it will preserve the right of every one of us. Why did they do it? Why did I support or wrote that op-ed to go against that bill? Because, again, as I said in the beginning, academia must be free. Freedom of speech can, we can take freedom of speech anywhere. I'm not okay with it, but it's not going to be as harmful as it is when we infringe our freedom of speech and opinion. And our students need to hear the history the way it is. And this is why I think we have to tell the history of Palestine and Israel the way it is. And our students and youth have right to know exactly how the history started. We don't have time to talk about that. But it's important for every one of us to be able to speak about it without fear of retaliation. The reason why I focus about the concept on the concept of justice and telling the truth. When Ukraine war happened, I was among the first people who condemned the Russian attack on Ukraine. And I was vilified because of that. But again, I was embarking from the principle of Russia is, was, and is an aggressor by attacking Ukraine. The same principle that I used to support Ukraine is the same principle that I'm using to support the right of our Palestinian brothers and sisters. So why that one is right and this one is wrong? It's a matter of principles. So I'm hoping that, especially to the leadership of the campus, to make the university a welcoming place where different ideas, as different as they could be, as opposing as they could be, as probably painful to hear as they could be, the university should be a platform where we all can speak in a civilized manner. Because I believe universities should be an incubator that brings. We are all at the end, we are human beings. Whether you are Jews, Muslim, Christian, Hindu, or you are atheist, agnostic, whatever you are, there's a beautiful verse in the Quran that says, all mankind, God created you from male and female in different tribes and races, and now nationalities and ethnicities, not to hate one another, not to discriminate against one another, to get to know one another. Why the Quran emphasizes get to know one another? Because if we don't know one another, we will not trust one another. If we don't trust one another, we cannot talk to one another. And this is why first, it's important for us, even if we disagree, we should sit down and talk to one another. But before we do that, get to know one another. And I will finish with this. I'm going to talk too much. I helped DePauw University. It's in Greencastle. I'm the Muslim chaplain. When October 7 happened and the Israeli or IDF aggression started against Gaza, killing a lot of civilians, in the Jummah, I told the Muslim students, I mentioned these principles, and I said, check in when your Jewish siblings on campus. See how they're doing. Some of them may have families in Israel, in Palestine, might be killed, or maybe they're hostages, maybe you know they are not safe. We have a human obligation to be supportive to people living in pain. And this, I see the same invitation. We don't do this because we expect anything from anyone else. We do this because these are our principles. As Muslims, we care for people. We care about people. And he said, go and shake their hands. And as a result of that, the Jewish students, they were so kind to the Muslim students to where they said, you know what, let's do a joint event where we don't talk politics, we don't talk about anything. I know some people will say, oh, this is just, you know, kumbaya conversation. People are dying and you are talking to one another. No, Islam doesn't stop us talking to one another, even when we are different. And this is the reason why, you know, your true principles or adherence to principles would show their crisis. And what they did, they come together and they cook food and then we ate together. Why I say we should be kind to our Jewish students or Muslim students or Christian students, in spite of what is going on in the Middle East, none of these people contributed in killing anything. They did not make the decision of whatever is happening. Well, they did not, they were not part of that decision. Maybe in their heart they support what happened, but that I don't have control over it. But I have control over it is to build this relationship, but that doesn't mean I need to compromise my principles. I will adhere to my principle. I will remain critical to Israel's atrocity. I will remain critical to the war crime that is going on in Palestine, as much as I would be critical to killing any taking life of any innocent Jewish, a Jew, whether it's in Palestine or Israel or anywhere in the world. I hope that when we get to know one another, we build the trust, then we can talk to one another. And then I hope that we can talk to all our differences.
And that's, I think it's an amazing way to kind of pinpoint how us as Muslims, we should go about things. And it really underlies the importance of a conversation at the end of the day. And honestly, I'm sure a lot of problems in the world could be solved by a conversation. And then how we behave as Muslim students, more specifically too, that could also be said about the people around us, those that are non-Muslim. And say, I think a lot of the times, Muslim students, more specifically, are being put in a predicament where we're the ones having to give in and being like, I want to reach out for a conversation. I want to comply to what you're saying. I want to come to a peaceful agreement. And sometimes it's not well received because we are, again, like you previously said, we're seen as the aggressors for action that we did not adhere to. And it comes to another question that we wanted to ask about how, I understand how we should behave as Muslim students, but how could those who are not Muslim come to Muslim students and, you know, start that conversation and any advice you could give them once they're as a leader?
Excellent. And this is where I would like to tie to what I said at the beginning. Muslims were put in a position of defense always. We are the oppressed, but always we are portrayed as oppressor. The killing, like I said, today, almost 30,000 I'll say the vast majority of them are innocent civilians. A lot of them were children, women who have nothing to do with Hamas or anything to do with what is going on or what happened on 7/10. It's an obligation for those who are listening to us who are not part of the Muslim, part of the Islamic faith or Arab. I wanted to tell you, go back to your scripture. If you have faith, okay? If you have faith, go back. If you're a Christian, go back to your Christianity. Read about Jesus. Read about the principles of Christianity. If you are a Hindu or Sikh, whatever it is, in all our faith, there are these principles that encourage us to treat people with dignity and give people the right of a human being, basic rights of humanity. So, first of all, have introspection. Reconcile between you and your principles. See what is going on to the Muslim. Is it right or is it wrong? This is where we have to put emotions aside. If you can take posts from news, please do. If you can take posts from social media, do. Use your God-given, divine-given intellect and see and analyze what is going on. Read the history. Read about Muslims. Know about Muslims. I'm not asking anyone to be expert about Islam. We are not expert about Islam ourselves. So, but know enough to know your neighbor. Remember, every majority in the country is minority in another country. Muslims are majority in Muslim majority countries. We are minority. Christians are minority in Muslim countries. And I've always said to the Muslims who are in majority Muslim countries, take care of your Christian siblings, neighbors, because you are a minority. So if you are a majority in a country, you have a moral obligation to make sure that the minority in your society are living peacefully. What can you do as someone who is not Muslim and understand what is going on? We're not asking sympathy for sympathy. Honestly, sympathy is good, but it's just emotion. Emotions, you know, we need characters, you know, manners, because emotions are temporary. Characters, manners are permanent, built in. We need you to have, you know, again, I'm not saying in a consistent way, but we want you to have the character of a decent human being where you stand up for the concept of justice and support the victim. It doesn't matter what color they are, what faith they practice. Speak against the oppressor. It doesn't matter whether they are, you know, Muslim, Christian, or Jew. Speak against them. Have the audacity to do the right thing. Trust me, when you do so, that is what makes you a leader. Leader is not boss or, you know, having popularity or anything. Leadership is the ability to stand up by the principles that guide our life as humanity. So first of all, I said, don't make Muslim friends, reach out to Muslim students and see how they are doing. The second thing, educate yourself and then try to, you know, befriend and learn more about the traditions and cultures and so forth, and learn about Islam from Muslims, not from social media. You know, don't be afraid to see, you know, a Muslim student say, hey, I would like to ask you a question. What do you think about what is going on? Then you will get a pure and uncensored information about what is going on and have a clear picture about Muslims.
I think that's a great point about how we tend to pick up just things from headlines. And as obviously,
yes,
you know, Western headlines are very biased. I think that's something that we can all pick up from what started off in October 7th. It was very you know, positive type on Israel.
Yes.
I think we tend to also, in this aspect of initiating that conversation, I think as just Americans, I think as just, you know, people that live in the West, we tend to isolate ourselves into our own group because that's what we feel more comfortable with. I think I've been a victim to that where I tend to stay with my Muslim friends because that's what feels more comfortable at times. Or I tend to stay with people that are from my ethnic background because I feel more comfortable with that. But I think we have such a privilege in a place like America where it's such a diverse place. I grew up in Mexico, so I only saw Mexicans, and I very much resonated with that half of me. But when I came to America, I realized how diverse everything was. I remember finally seeing Muslim kids my age and feeling that connection to them. But I also met people were that were, not Catholic but Christian or
Yes,
Jewish people. I remember Sikhs, Hindus. It's things like that that I'm like, there's just certain aspects of the privilege that we have living in America, but we don't take that as an advantage and we just brush it away and we isolate ourselves. We can be very individualistic. We think about only our emotions, and I think it's a great aspect of that conversation. It's like, let's put our emotions aside and reach out to our neighbors and just talk to them, create that conversation where we cannot have that middle, not even middle ground. Just obviously acknowledge what is wrong and what is right, but have that peaceful conversation to get to a place where we cannot get to the facts of the story and
Yes.
not live in the reality and that we created on ourselves or the
Yes.
biases that we created onto ourselves. And somehow I don't blame people for having a specific mindset, as for example that the what is happening in Palestine is a religious issue and that Palestinians are the aggressors. I don't blame them because a lot of the people that I hear this from are people that have been fed this their whole lives and have not heard another perspective, or people that have read headlines by mass media companies that have obviously have a very westernized perspective of it and don't reach out, to see the other side of it all. So I don't blame them, and I very much appreciate you saying the whole aspect of, getting away from our own biases. And I can say that for myself that I've also had my own biases about certain things that I view. And yeah, just really seeing that onto ourselves and just leading how we live life in that aspect of creating an open conversation is very important. But we do have another question. I don't know.
Yeah, honestly, kind of just answered, our concluding question, how do we move forward? And then something else that kind of just came to my mind again as we were just talking here is the word or the term anti-Semitism. Because even with everything you just said and the great conversation that we've had in this space right now, there are those who will still watch this and say this is anti-Semitism. So how would you, because like many students also face this where like this issue where anything they say is deemed anti-Semitic. So how should, individuals in general approach this issue and to a viewer who may interpret what you said today as anti-Semitic, how do you respond to that?
So it's a very clear, you have to completely distinguish between Israel and Jews. It has to be very clear. I would condemn, I was born in Saudi Arabia. I condemn and criticize Saudi Arabia multiple times. I lived in Niger. I criticized Niger and the government multiple times. I can't remember how many times. We criticized the government of the United States where we live in, and the Constitution gave us that right. That doesn't make me anti-Saudi. It doesn't make me anti-American, nor does it make me anti-Nigerian. In Israel, let's speak facts. In Israel today, you have the Arab of 48, 1948. These are Arabs, they're not Jews. Many of them are in the elected official in the Knesset, the parliament of Israel. So Israel, by fact or by default, yes, majority are Jews, but Israel is made of people who are not Jews. So we are condemning the policies and the politics of Israel. We are not saying, first of all, if you go and say every Israeli is horrible, that's horrible. Even that doesn't make you anti-Semitic. It makes you anti-Israeli. It's very important for us to understand the terms really well. So being anti-Israel, or first of all, criticizing some certain Israeli policies, occupation, things that are going on as a war crime, that does not make me anti-Israel, first of all. Because I did not condemn the entire Israel. I condemned selected events that are or policies or behavior that are carried on by Israel that are condemned by the international community. It is not me. In fact, actually, even the Western media is criticizing Israel's IDF's policies and Israel's policies right now. Does it make CNN, for instance, anti-Semitic? No. Does it make it anti-Israel? It doesn't make it anti-Israel. So if the criticizing certain policies doesn't make you anti that country, it definitely would not make you anti a nation in that country, which is the Jews. So anti-Semitism is clearly, again, I am not in a position to define anti-Semitism. I would let our Jewish brothers and sisters define what anti-Semitism is. I would define what anti-Islamophobia is. And any hateful speech that is directed against someone just because they are Muslims. If somebody hates me because I am Ahmad, it doesn't make them it doesn't make them Islamophobic. But if he says, Ahmed, I hate you because you are a Muslim, then it will make him Islamophobia. It's Islamophobic. So it's very important to define the terms. Even in Islamophobia, I'm saying this. So I'm saying the Muslims, they use everything and say, hey, this is Islamophobic. Okay, we have to be, and again, this goes back to the verse that Allah says, do not let your animosity toward a group of people make you unjust, be just, and then say the truth of your God, even if it's against your own self. So having said this, I would say, from my understanding, anyone who hates Jews in general, then they're anti-Semitic. If anyone who says Jews are bad, they're anti-Semitic. If I go and say I hate Israel because of its, you know, the majority are Jews, then it's anti-Semitic. I'm anti-Semitic. But I am talking about Israel in isolation from the Jewish community, who we have built a strong relationship with. So if you listen to my conversation today, and you think I am an anti-Semitic, or you too, because you brought this conversation on, I would say go and revise your facts. Go and do your homework. Go and reread what anti-Semitism is. If you are equating anti-Semitism to criticizing Israel, then you're wrong. Academically, you are wrong. And you are lacking academic integrity. So, and you are infringing on my freedom of speech. In our speech today, there is nothing that insinuates violence. In fact, we are talking about building bridges. But while we are talking about building bridges, we don't want hypocrisy. We want the facts to be laid out exactly the way they are. If I'm coming and building peace with you, I need to talk about the issues we have first. I cannot just come and say, oh, we're good, man. Even though you've wronged me 1, 2, 3, 4, or I did the same thing to you. It's very important to build honest relationship, to talk about our differences, to talk about the issues that we have. I have a lot of rabbi friends who literally they look out for me more than many imams. And these rabbi friends, I'm talking rabbi, they're Jews. And we have this trust and this relationship toward its brotherhood. So I come from an event where it's led by a rabbi. This Friday, I'm going to a synagogue. So if you want, that makes me anti-Semitic. You know, you need to check your facts. So I wanted to have people to get out of your emotions. Whether you are a professor, whether you are a student, whether you are a university leader, let's get to our mind as civilized and intellectual people. Let's make sure we are guided by facts, not emotions. The second thing that I would like to mention, we are talking about these issues because we're human beings. If we were in a jungle like lions, we would be physically fighting one another. What makes us different as a human being, when we disagree, we don't fight. Or at least I said we should not. We should not keep throwing, you know, unwarranted labels, labeling people these are pro-Hamas or these are pro, just because we are supporting Palestinians, right? Or being labeled as anti-Semitic just because we are criticizing certain Israeli policies, it's very important for them, for people, to understand that we as human beings, we will speak about these hard truths and facts, yet we still sit down and eat. And I will see you tomorrow and I will smile. I'm not going to fake smile. I will smile from the bottom of my heart, even if you are a Zionist. I will shake your hand. I will sit down and say, let's have a conversation. I mean, if we don't talk, how are we going to solve our problems? So we sit down and eat. And you know, I said I will finish with that, but I was coming from Jordan this past week on the Boeing Dreamliner, Boeing 787.
Okay.
We're crossing not only the Atlantic, but we're crossing Europe. And we're crossing, we know, we pass Africa and we cross Europe. Before we took off, different passports, you know, or different colors of passport, people from different nationalities. Once we got on that plane, the doors are secure. We took off, nationalities didn't matter. We were all eating the same food, we're all using the same restroom. Nobody's yelling at one another. Everyone is peaceful. Even though God knows in that plane there are people who hated one another. As I said, we have different nationalities. Yet we come and we landed. I look at our university as IU just like that plane. IU, you have admitted these students. You know you have their universities. You should love them. You should embrace them. You should give them the platform they deserve. You should allow them to be who they are. You don't want fake people. A lot of people express themselves and faculties be comfortable to listen to things that you disagree with. Because the biggest way, the best way to grow your comfort zone is to feel uncomfortable. If you stay in comfort zone, you will be you know, if you stay in your comfort zone, it will be only your office or your class or your client or you know your tribe or that. The more you push yourself to feel uncomfortable, the more, you know, the bigger your comfort zone will be until the whole world becomes a comfort zone to you. And we want to make sure the whole campus is a comfort zone for everyone, not because we all aligned, but in spite of all the differences. It's all about conversation. I hope that the university will facilitate places where people can express themselves. Without feeling retaliation, without feeling labels. And then after that, with the intention of coming out of this conversation with some sort of common ground. Some people would look at what is going on in Israel and Palestine and say there is no common ground, but there is. We are human beings. That's the common ground that we should avoid. We are all in a human being. That's the second ground. Then the concept of morality and the U.S. Constitution that guides.
I think that's a perfect way. Yeah, and we really appreciate your time, and we learned so much. Honestly,
I wanted to listen more to you, but I, you know,
we're here.
We need to have a different one where I listen to you.
We'll come back.
But I wanted to say something. You know, this could be. Is it? This is not uncensored, right? This is uncensored,
yes.
Right? We can say whatever we want, right? I want to commend you too. And race, it is critical. It's important for a lot of people. But the fact you are sitting here, you both are from different race, but talking about something that interests every human being, it's amazing. Many times among the Muslim students, there is racism. And honestly, that is dividing the Muslim students on campus. And that's why I wanted to commend you for being from different racial groups and then yet coming together on purpose. We should be not race-driven, we should be purpose-driven. And this is exactly what you have exhibited. So I wanted to thank you so much for coming out of your comfort zone, creating a new comfort zone, what grew your comfort zone. And I really hope that you too will be a model for the other student bodies, in terms of whether they're Muslims or not. To understand working together, race does not matter. Trust me, we should go beyond that. We should address our differences, our commonalities, by breaking these barriers that unfortunately are very artificial.
Thank you.
So thank you so much. And like I said, I hope that I will there will be a day where I will listen to you more than you talk.
We'll make it happen. Thank you
Yes,
so much, Sam,
absolutely.
for
It's my
coming
pleasure. Thank
here.
you for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much, Sam, for coming having this conversation with us. It was very beneficial, and I'm sure everyone listening to this is, gonna take as much knowledge as we did today.
So overall, we're glad that you were able to come on us today and, kind of just share some more knowledge on this whole topic with us, because it is a very polarizing topic, but like I said, you have to like grow our uncomfortability to gain more comfortability. So I think you've gone a long way helping us do that today, and we appreciate you coming.
Absolutely, and thank you for. I hope this will reach to as many people as possible. At the beginning, I said let's leave emotion and emphasis, but let me conclude with this. I would say we have some sort of empathy, understand people's struggles. Whatever conversation we have today, it is because we have empathy for our Muslim students, for our Jewish students, for our Christian students, for Christians who are our students who are atheists or agnostic, whatever faith they are from. We have empathy with every single one of them. And we are having this conversation so that we can trigger or call appetizer so that we make sure we are as human being siblings, is whether we want it or not, we are human. I tell people you don't get to choose your siblings. Whoever your dad or mom deliver is your sibling. If I'm a human being, you are a human being, we are siblings, whether we want it or not. Now let's talk about this. The fact that we have our differences doesn't make us not siblings. We are still brothers and sisters in humanity, and I hope that should be the normal practice. And this is to every student. Please, you see any student on campus, look at them and say hi to them. And greet them whether you know them or not. Don't look at their faith or race or ethnicity, whatever. It doesn't matter. We are all students, and we have to take care of one another.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
Thank
so
you
much.
for
Okay, right.